Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, courtesy of WUIS Radio, which is the University of Illinois station in Springfield. And we'll be joining a feed from them in progress.
Rich Bradley, WUIS News. Honest Abe is about to get his own state-of-the-art showplace here in Springfield. President Bush is now in town in Springfield for today's dedication of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum, set to formally open. Although the museum has, in fact, been open the last 3 or 4 days, people have been allowed to take tours. But it comes as a result of many years of talking and planning and ultimately construction. The museum is designed to hopefully generate some new interest in the 16th president's life through a mix of showmanship and scholarship. The $145 million institution is devoted to researching Lincoln and explaining his life and legacy. At a vantage point in downtown Springfield, right near the Abraham Lincoln Museum, Presidential Museum, is WUIS State House Bureau Chief Bill Wheelhouse. And Bill, any sign of the president yet?
Well, the president, I understand, is inside the Lincoln Library or Lincoln Museum right now. I believe his tour of the facility is over. The few media that were allowed to accompany him to take photos and things are outside. And everyone is waiting quietly now for the president to come on stage. He'll be the final of a number of speakers before a crowd that fills much of the Union Station Square here in downtown Springfield, just across from the $145 museum and library. Crowd estimates have run the gamut, 12 to 15,000, but we do know some of those reserved seats that were towards the back of the area were empty, and they did allow some of the people that had standing room only tickets to make their way into those seats. So perhaps the crowd was not as huge as expected, but it is a sizable crowd here with quite a bit of media attention, a lot of dignitaries, and if you scan the tops of the buildings all around this area, whether it be the Myers Brothers building downtown, the National City Bank building, the museum and library complex, apartment complexes nearby, you do see armed shooters, I should say, security personnel in place. We do have we're waiting on people to arrive to the podium, but we will have the opening will be the Star Spangled Banner, then we'll have an invocation, then we'll be hearing remarks from dignitaries.
Bill, for the benefit of radio listeners who I don't have the benefit of the video, describe for us where you are in relationship to, many people listening are pretty familiar with downtown Springfield, but you're near the old Union Railroad Station, are you not?
We are directly in front of that, just to the, and in front of that would be to the south of that, and if you look a little bit to the southeast of us, probably another 50 yards, is the stage draped in bunting. The stage is on 6th Street, and in front of the podium says the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum.
Speakers on the stage will be looking, facing the west, right?
They will be facing to the west, and those speakers will include Senator Richard Durbin, Senator Barack Obama, Congressman Ray LaHood, Governor Blagojevich, and also President Bush. U.S. Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert will be introducing him. We'll hear from a winner of a C-SPAN contest, a 21st century Gettysburg address, and that person had to do it in the same number of words as the original Gettysburg.
When the president, by the way, Bill, arrived at Abraham Lincoln Capital Airport this morning, Air Force One was due to touch down around 10:15, but he took the opportunity to recognize a Springfield area resident for her volunteer work Della Amos scheduled to meet with the president when he arrived. She volunteers with the foster grandparent program at Pawnee Grade School. She's been honored with the Award of Merit from the Illinois State Board of Education for her work. And the president today recognized her at the airport for that dedication. And aside from that and his tour of the museum and his speech in the dedication ceremony, that's all the president plans to do in Springfield. As soon as he the dedication speech is completed, he'll be back in his limo headed to the airport aboard Air Force One with wheels up. Expected around 12:30 and the flight back to Washington.
Yep, and he has business planned in Washington the rest of the afternoon. As for what happens here in Springfield, the museum will be open to the public and will be free of charge today. And I imagine there'll be quite a gathering of folks. Now, this is not the
Good
first dedication we've had here.
Governor Ron, we're going to mention the people of
We're going to break away here at 6 minutes past 11 on AM 580 WILL. The bells above St. Peter's Square are ringing, confirming that a new pope has been elected. So we will get back to coverage, if we have time, of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield. But right now, let's go to NPR in progress for coverage of the news of the election of a new pope.
Cardinals will come out and say in Latin, "We have a pope," and announce that man's name, both his given name and the name he has chosen to take as Pope. And shortly after that, probably within the hour, we would expect to see the new Pope himself and hear him address this crowd for the first time. Over this period of time, the next few minutes and the next hour or so, this news will be obviously spreading fast around Rome. And if tradition holds, as if the same thing happens, it's happened when past popes are picked, people will be streaming into the square from all over the city to get here in time to actually see this new pope and hear what he has to say. And, of course, find out who he is.
And find out who he is and where he comes from and, well, all of that. So stay with us. We'll bring you all of that information as it happens, as we learn it, as the events continue in Vatican City. Sylvia Pagioli, this has not happened for, well, over a quarter century now, and the excitement must be tremendous.
It is tremendous. You know, there's an entire generation of Catholics and non-Catholics who've only known John Paul II as their pope. They certainly have never seen a conclave. And so there's been infinitely more excitement than normal. In 1978, the last time, there were actually two deaths of popes and two conclaves. But it is really exciting, and the square has been packed for 2 days, and it's wild. And what is fascinating about this conclave is also this mixture of incredible medieval Renaissance pageantry, the theater, the incredible vision the other day of the procession, the music, and then the high-tech aspect, because, you know, this total secrecy has to be ensured. And so we understand incredibly sophisticated jamming devices. Anti-bugging devices were placed under a false floor in the Sistine Chapel. So you've had a little bit of everything in this conclave. A lot of modernity, and a lot of pageantry.
To remind you, 115 Roman Catholic cardinals from six continents sequestered themselves inside the Sistine Chapel beginning on Monday evening, that in Rome time. This is obviously a secret vote. We don't know what has been happening. Monsignor Kevin Irwin, who's with us here in the studio, this election of a new pope on just the fourth ballot, can we read anything into the speed of this election?
First of all, the fourth ballot was the same ballot that was taken when John Paul I was elected, so it is not unprecedented. That happened in 1978 at the first conclave. Secondly, it seems to me that the general congregations where the cardinals met each day after the funeral, after the death of the pope, and the 9 days of mourning, all of that, one could say it worked. Their time to get to know each other, to discuss, to be with each other, My sense also is that they went into this new hotel, Santa Marta, on Sunday evening. That was unprecedented. Normally they did not go into conclave till the next day. So my sense is the opening night supper, the visiting, the mass that Monday morning before the conclave itself started was also part of the process of, again, discussing and talking and getting to know each other. It certainly is, a bit of a surprise to me, but here we are doing it one more time in 26 years.
The news of the election of the 265th Pope is being eagerly awaited, of course, not just in Vatican City, but around the world, where the more than 1.1 billion Catholics are. Joining us now from Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland, is Monsignor Stephen Rolfs, the rector. Good to have you. Hello, Monsignor, are you there?
I am here.
Has the news spread on campus yet that there's been an election of new pope?
This started to spread about 10 minutes ago.
And what's happening on the campus?
Well, of course, the seminary here, that's where I'm at, and of course everyone's running to get to their TVs and to their radios to see who exactly is the new pope. I personally am stunned that it's so quick. I thought it would be tomorrow or Thursday even, but obviously... There's some candidate that they have gleaned as the most appropriate candidate, and they've elected him. So we're all very happy that we have a new pope.
And we can't speculate at this point on who the new pope may be, but the speed of this, as you say, I mean, a lot of people were sort of digging in for, at least another day, if not several days.
That's right. Obviously, the Cardinals had rallied around a candidate that we didn't know about. In other words, it became clear to them before it became clear to the pundits who were outside the conclave, wondering who was going to be elected.
Is there any sense of unseemly haste in this election?
No, I don't think so. John Paul I was elected on the fourth ballot. It's not without precedent, certainly. It all depends on how soon they are able to perceive what the Lord wants them to do. And evidently, they proceed rather quickly.
Monsignor Rolfs, thanks very much for joining us, and we'll maybe check back in with you later in the day.
That'll be fine.
Monsignor Stephen Rolfs is the rector of Mount St. Mary's Seminary in Emmitsburg, Maryland, and he joined us by phone from the seminary there. And Monsignor Kevin Irwin is, what's going to be the procedure? There's a window on the second floor of the grand colonnade there at St. Peter's. What's going to happen there?
That is called the loggia above the front doors of St. Peter's Basilica, and what will happen is that the Cardinal Deacon will emerge and announce that in Latin that we have a pope, and he will announce his name announcement the pope will appear at that loggia. He gives a blessing. The blessing technically is termed to the city and to the world, Urbi et Orbi, reflective of his being the bishop of the city of Rome first, and to then blessing to the whole world. That same kind of blessing is given every year at Christmas and on Easter. And that sometimes was followed, certainly by Pope John Paul I, John Paul II, by a comment or two, and John Paul II wowed the crowd by speaking in Italian and asking them to correct his Italian, which I don't think had to be done very often.
Mm-hmm. Is after the election, is there a ceremony, a separate ceremony for installation of a pope, the equivalent of an inauguration?
Exactly, and after the conclaves of 1978, those masses of installation were held within 6 days of the election. I did hear on some conversation in Rome recently that they were looking perhaps toward Sunday, May the 1st, to have it on a Sunday for a large crowd. And if it's on May 1st, it's hard to miss the symbolism of May Day.
Mm-hmm. There is going to be, we're still waiting. No longer confusion about whether a pope has been elected, but we are still awaiting the name of the new pope, and not only his given name, but the name he has chosen for himself. And there will be considerable symbolism in that, as well as people read the tea leaves to see what significance there is in the name he's chosen for himself.
No question about that. And so will it be Pius the 13th? Will it be John the 24th? Will it be Paul the 7th? Will it be John Paul the 3rd? You have number of recent options that could happen, and they will be read by various folks to interpret what kind of signal is this given.
And then there will be also a great deal of excitement in whatever place this Pope is from.
Absolutely, absolutely. And with communications today, I'm sure that we'll be able to see and hear that fairly soon.
The politics of the Church being what they are, the majority of the cardinals are still from Europe, but there are more and more Catholics from around the world, and there has been considerable speculation about the possibility of an African or a South American pope for the first time. Of course, John Paul II himself broke the long tradition of Italian popes.
Exactly, and so that's certainly what Vatican watchers are watching, and we'll know fairly quickly, obviously, what the resolution was to that in terms of where the Pope has come from and what that will signal.
Will we learn, obviously this conclave has been held in secret. After it's over, will we learn more details of what went on inside and how the balloting went?
Well, we're not supposed to.
Not supposed to at all.
No, not supposed to at all. And it turns out that those books that have been written about various conclaves seem to be a reportage of second and third conversations, but one is not supposed to.
So this is kept secret, though I understand a record is kept and filed away in the archives.
That is correct, and that record is given to the Holy Father himself and placed in his archives. That is correct.
So this is going to remain a secret. We'll never know if people were voting in blocks or how it went. The curiosity of those who follow politics, the more transparent politics of modern democracies, are frustrated by this. But this is really designed to keep outside pressure from influencing the selection of the Pope.
Which, of course, has happened. And because that did happen in the history of the Church, there were checks and balances, forgive the expression, put into the way the Pope is elected in order that there not be intervention by emperors or other folks to influence or to put a negative slant on one or another candidate and to approve some and to not approve others. Therefore, very clear restrictions have been placed on this election.
This is a great moment for those in St. Peter's Square who've been, some of them camped out, I guess, for some time now, waiting for this moment and eager to greet the new Pope. If you're just joining us, at about 10 minutes before the hour, smoke began to emerge from the chimney atop the Sistine Chapel in Vatican City. Considerable confusion. We had all been told that to allay the confusion that had happened 26 years ago, there would be the ringing of the bells of St. Peter's at the same time that the white smoke emerged to signal the election of a new pope. Well, the smoke emerged and the bells did not ring for quite some time. Considerable confusion, but now it has all been cleared up. A new pope has been elected, though we are still, it's been confirmed by Vatican Radio, but we're still awaiting the appearance at that window above St. Peter's Square of the official announcement of the new pope and the new pope's name. And that, of course, is going to be the most important announcement of the day, though within an hour of that, the new pope himself will go to that window and bless the crowd there at St. Peter's Square. The Catholic Church has gone through enormous changes in the papacy of John Paul II. This has been a time of consolidation of power of the power within centralization of the power of the Pope. This has been a change. There's going to be considerable discussion on the issue of collegiality. Could you explain that for us?
Surely. One of the signature phrases that Pope John the 23rd has been credited with has been the collegiality of the Church and the way that the ecumenical council function with bishops discussing with bishops and discussing in terms of decisions to be held by the highest authority of the Church. So it's not a monarchy is what we're talking about, and so collegiality is bishops working with bishops. And at the same time, under Pope John Paul II, once you have a council like the Second Vatican Ecumenical Council, it is not surprising that following that, there's a time of consolidation, of understanding what the council has taught and has meant. And that's been coupled with the communications revolution, and so and the ability to travel as much as this Holy Father has done. All of that has indicated, has been a way of showing a clarity of vision, clarity of teaching, consistency. And that's been certainly a hallmark of this Holy Father for a lot of reasons.
Let's go back to NPR Sylvia Pagioli, who's there in Vatican City awaiting the announcement of the name of the new Pope. And Sylvia, to put it mildly, this is going to be a tough act to follow.
A very tough act to follow. The second, some say the second longest papacy in the 2,000-year history of the Catholic Church, and one that certainly revolutionized, in some sense, the role of the Pope. John Paul II took the papacy into the world. He, in a sense, became the bishop of the world, the traveling evangelist. Of course, his role in the fall of communism was fundamental. He was one of the key figures in putting an end to the Cold War. He was he knew how to use the media. He was an actor and a man of the stage, and very much used that in full. He spoke many languages. This is going to be very hard. And in fact, going into this conclave, there was no obvious favorite. There were certainly two front runners, perhaps, or one front runner, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. We don't know if he's going to be the one who was picked, but there was no obvious favorite. Also, because many of these cardinals, even though their age is rather old, they're rather old. Many of them have not been cardinals for very long. So you have these two kind of. They're not that well known. Many of them to the world. So. It's going to be very curious to see whether the cardinals opted for a kind of continuity, both in style and charisma and in doctrinal positions, or whether they've decided to choose an older pope who will be a short transition, will have a short transitional papacy, or whether there will be a kind of pendulum effect, which was always traditional in the story of the Catholic Church. Always a liberal pope was said to be followed by a conservative, or vice versa, or as the Italians say, a fat pope was followed by a skinny pope. We'll probably know in a few minutes, we hope.
Again, if you're just joining us, news of the election of a new pope. I guess the white smoke emerged about half an hour ago. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is special coverage from NPR News of the election of a new pope. And again, this just happened about half an hour ago. Word spread. With me here in the studio is Monsignor Kevin Irwin. And Monsignor, what's happening now in the Sistine Chapel?
Well, first, after the election and the results are revealed, the dean of the College of Cardinals asks the candidate, will he accept the election? And then he accepts that. And fairly quickly is taken off to a side room in which he is vested in the traditional white cassock of a pope. The tailor company in Rome furnishes three sizes, and one of which is placed on him. He's given a white sash and a white skull cap, and then he returns to the Sistine Chapel. And at that point, each of the cardinals individually goes to the altar at the Sistine Chapel, in front of which is going to be a chair where the Holy Father is seated, and they offer him an act of homage, greeting, obedience, and he gives them the sign of peace, a fraternal sign of peace. They return to their places, and after that is concluded, then they leave in procession from the Sistine Chapel and then move together in a typically beautifully orchestrated, elegant procession in their red robes to the loggia above St. Peter's, where he will appear for the first time in public.
And the crowd there in St. Peter's Square getting more excited even as we listen. Emily Harris of NPR News is there. Emily, what's going on now?
More and more people are coming to the square, and the
the excitement is just building here. It's sort of periodic cheers come up and applause. The red curtains are already draped. This happened several days ago in the central window of the atrium, hall above the atrium of St. Peter's Basilica. And the central balcony is where first we'll hear the announcement of who this pope is, and then we will eventually actually hear from this new pope himself. There's been, I think I saw a little bit of the white curtain behind on the inside move as if someone was peeking out from there to look at the crowd, but there's been nothing significant, no actual doors opening, but the crowd here is getting more and more dense and people more and more eager to find out who the pope will be.
And we're looking for flutterings of curtains and symbols of smoke and bells to try to figure out what is going on inside that building. Well, we'll know soon enough. Joining us now from Lagos, Nigeria, is Father George Ehusani, the Secretary General of the Catholic Bishops' Conference of Nigeria, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
This must be an exciting moment for you.
Oh, it is very exciting.
And indeed, among those considered among the favorites for to be Pope is one of your own.
Yes, of course. I mean, Cardinal Ariza is one of those people who could be considered for the papacy. So we are excited. But we are excited just that the new pope has emerged with the white smoke.
And are Catholics there in Nigeria, will they be gathering in churches or where to hear this news?
Well, Catholics have been praying. We have been praying ever since Pope died for the emergence of a new pope that will fit into the shoes of John Paul II and take the church further beyond where John Paul II left off. I am not aware that there is any particular gathering, but we have been doing our prayers on a daily basis. At this hour now, people will be going in for evening mass, and this will be an occasion for a prayerful celebration of the news, as soon as the news comes out of who the person is.
Well, Father, thank you very much. We will check back with you later in the day, but let's go back to Emily Harris in St. Peter's Square. Again, we're seeing that curtain flutter, Emily.
The curtain is fluttering, and the crowd here all is staring right at that curtain. You can only see a piece of the white curtain that's behind the glass because the rest is, a drape of red curtain framing the window there. And the crowd is watching it. It's moved several times, but again, nobody's come out yet to say anything. And the white curtain on the inside has not yet been drawn back to allow anyone to come out. So the crowd is getting more and more eager. And the anticipation here is really building.
Anybody who's ever been involved in a theater, this, of course, a grand stage indeed, but it's hard to resist that glimpse out between the curtain at the audience, whether you're in a high school play or on Broadway.
That's right. We don't know. Maybe there's a Swiss guard up there looking out the windows. Maybe it's the person who's going to be coming out to make the announcement. But anyway, no real news yet from here, just a lot of excitement.
And Monsignor Irwin... right now, we've heard a lot about the three sizes of papal vestments that have been sent to the Vatican in anticipation of this, a large, medium, and small, presumably they're being adjusted to fit whomever has been elected.
That's correct. And so when the new pope appears, he'll be fully vested in what he ought to wear and will wear for the rest of his life.
This is a transitional moment. Unlike few others, this election is very special. Obviously, it's of major importance to the Catholics around the world, but to peoples of other faiths as well, and to people who don't profess any faith at all. This is a major moral leader of the world and a leader of got secular powers as well as the leader of his church.
I don't think so.
That's correct.
I don't know.
Part of that, we'll have to credit John Paul II for his openness to other faiths and his explicit apology to people of other faiths and dramatic moments with great deal of concern and compassion and affection. At the same time, there has been a tradition of this in terms of other religions being somewhat interested, but I've never seen the volume of the outpouring that I've seen with the death of this Holy Father. Interestingly enough, I was driving across town this morning, and there was a Baptist church in Washington, D.C., and the logo outside the church was not the announcement of the sermon topic, but it was a quote from John Paul II. That the pastor posted there for people to think about this week. So it's grassroots as well.
And let's go back to Silvia Pagioli, who's also there in Rome. You were talking earlier about how this John Paul II had transformed the papacy. He, of course, grew up where the great issues of the world were the struggle first of the Second World War and then the Cold War. He himself has appointed virtually every single one of the cardinals who voted in this election. And the backdrop, the intellectual and emotional and political backdrop for this new pope will be very different.
Totally. This is going to be the first pope of the third millennium. He inherits a completely new, different world. The Cold War now seems like ancient history. The big clashes, if you will, or the big contrasts right now are either the North-South relations and, of course, Christian relations with Islam, Catholic relations and Christian relations in general with the Islamic world, which is playing itself out very much also in Europe, which is the extraordinary paradox here in the heart of Christendom, in Italy and in Europe as a whole. There's this tremendous decline in church attendance, and while growing numbers of Muslim immigrants are arriving here, many of them very, very faithful and following. So you have empty churches and the mosques cropping up here. This is a whole new world. We have a faction in the church, certainly represented by Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, who was John Paul's theological watchdog, who's very concerned about the growing what he calls the secularization of Europe. He feels that the Catholics perhaps may become a minority, but have to be very much defending the true faith and to be able to preserve the Christian roots of Europe. So these are going to be some of the big issues coming up that the next pope will have to confront. It depends where he comes from. Will he be a European and therefore sensitive to these issues? Will he be a third world pope from Latin America, who will be much more probably in tune with social justice issues, the problems of globalization? There are big questions ahead. Certainly the world that the new pope, the 265th pope, according to the Vatican's count, has a completely new world ahead of him, very different from that John Paul II had when he arrived in 1978.
Mm-hmm. And it is important to remember that the issues that, well, dominate the discussions, the political discussions of Catholics here in the United States, the ordination of women, the ability of priests to marry, issues like that. These are not the signal issues elsewhere in the Catholic world.
Not at all, and many analysts believe that these were not the primary issues these cardinals were worried about when they entered the conclave. Certainly, as you were saying now in the studio, perhaps the biggest issue, the most important issue for all of them, whether they be more conservative, less conservative, a little bit more moderate, is the issue of collegiality, which divides more, let's say, the cardinals that come from the Curia, who don't feel it so much, obviously, as the cardinals who come from outside the archdiocese, the local churches. There is a great sense that under Pope John Paul II, the power was very much centralized here in the Vatican, and there are growing demands. There's a yearning for more power sharing, more devolution of power to the local bishops. There's a sense that there are problems, local problems, that can be solved better at the local level rather than in Rome. Certainly, the sex abuse scandal was one of those, but not just that. There are many, many issues, and I think this is certainly one of the main things, probably one of the first issues the new pope will have to confront.
And again, that word collegiality, which is going to be the symbolism of this. Monsignor Irwin, Pope John Paul II, many skills. A lot of people said, though, he did not spend a lot of his time managing that Vatican bureaucracy, the Curia.
That has been said, and I think that his legacy in terms of travel and in terms of ideas and in terms of the breadth of his writing is certainly, he decided that was going to be his contribution. There is pretty broad agreement that a number of Vatican offices continue to function and in ways that were not given the same kind of centralization rhetoric that Silvia just reflected in terms of his approach to other things in the church. The Vatican bureaucracy, I say that with affection, but it's a very complex organization. And when someone says, what does the Vatican think or say about something? Well, there are many Vatican offices. It's not monolithic. It is not uniform always. And that's a question of maybe getting people on the same page and moving forward so that there are not differences in two sides of a mouth speaking.
Mm-hmm. And Silvia, one of the things, of course, that gives the Roman Catholic Church the solidity that it has for its believers around the world is the ancient aspect of this, but also ancient is that bureaucracy, the curia.
Absolutely, and as the Monsignor was just saying, there are different views. There were also different views on certain other issues, even among the cardinals who were closest in tune with John Paul. For example, John Paul II took such a strong stand. He became in a sense the world spokesman against the U.S.-led war in Iraq. An Italian cardinal, who is the president of the conference, Italian Conference of Bishops, Camillo Ruini, a possible papal contender, was in favor of the deployment of Italian troops in Iraq. So you have also some differences of this kind. Not everybody was totally in tune on that issue. We'll have to see now. I'm looking at the square. I'm looking at the screen. We're still waiting here. It's almost 40. I believe almost about 40 minutes since the bells or the first smoke, I should say. Mm-hmm. And we haven't yet seen who the senior deacon of the College of Cardinals, who is a Chilean cardinal, Medina Estevez. He is the person who is supposed to appear and announce in Latin. I announce to you a news of great joy. Boy, we have a pope, and we're waiting for it. The words "Habemus Papam." Anyway, we all want to know who it is.
And there is that curiosity, Monsignor Irwin. Church's liturgy has been changed a lot. The Mass is now said in local languages, yet for these grand ceremonial occasions, Latin.
And that was the argument that some traditionalists kept after the Vatican Council. Why not keep the language universal so everyone can hear the same words? The other side of that is that liturgy should be something that we can understand and pray from our hearts in languages that we use every day. But on this occasion, this is when Catholic means universal, and universal means a common language and able to articulate one of the most important announcements that we have.
Well, joining us now is Jamie Brandt, a seminarian at Theological College at Catholic University here in Washington, D.C. Very good of you to join us today. Excuse me, Jamie Brandt?
Yes, hello.
Hi, you there?
I am here, thank you.
Can you tell us what's going on there at the Theological College campus?
Right now, the bells of the National Shrine, the Immaculate Conception, are tolling. They're ringing loudly in conjunction with the bells in Rome, so I would say the mood around here is one of excitement as we wait the announcement of who the Pope is.
How did you get the news?
I was actually sitting here watching EWTN just prior to the white smoke coming out of the chimney stack, and people were running around the seminary here saying, you know, we have a Pope. So.
This is an extraordinary moment for you, joining the seminary under John Paul II. Presumably, you will serve out your career under this new pope.
Oh, that's correct. I feel very fortunate and blessed that that I am part of a church that was under the leadership of such a wonderful man who kind of held us on a steady course. And though I had hoped that I might be ordained under this pope, I look with great anticipation towards where this new pope will take us.
And how far away are you from ordination?
4 years.
So it's going to be a while yet.
It will be. A very patient road.
So The National Shrine, of course, is a magnificent building northern part of Washington, D.C. It dominates much of the skyline in that part of the city and a grand basilica of its own.
That's correct, and I'm very blessed that right out my window I'm able to look onto the blue and gold dome of the National Shrine. And just looking outside right now and seeing that there's workers already hoisting a gold and white bunting in the shape of an M, of course, standing for Mary. They're putting it all over the front doors of the basilica.
Thanks very much, Jamie Brandt, and we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
Hey, you're welcome, sir. Have a great day.
Jamie Brandt, a seminarian at Theological College at Catholic University in Washington, D.C. Monsignor Irwin just passed me a note saying he's scheduled to celebrate the Mass at the National Shrine later today here in Washington, D.C. That's going to be quite an occasion.
Well, that is correct, Neil, and allow me a moment reminiscence here. When the Pope first took a turn for the worse on that famous Thursday afternoon, I had Mass immediately at 5:15 at the Shrine and spoke about the obviously imminent demise of the Holy Father. His sickness had gotten much worse. And now, in God's providence, I have the 5:15 Mass again today upon the election of this Pope. So I feel very blessed in that way.
Again, we await the announcement of the name of the newly elected Pope, the 265th Roman Catholic Pope. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You're listening to live coverage from NPR News. Let's go back now to NPR's Emily Harris in St. Peter's Square. Emily, we're still awaiting. I guess the smoke began to emerge about 50 minutes ago now, and we're still awaiting word, the official word, that's of the announcement.
That's right. The bells have stopped ringing, one of the signals that a new pope was selected. The smoke that had been coming out about an hour ago, almost an hour ago, from the temporary chimney on top of the Sistine Chapel has stopped billowing out of there. More and more people have come to the square.
Wait, the curtains are being drawn.
The white curtains have just been opened. The door to the into the balcony is opening. Several people have come out. It's hard to see who they are from here. They're very small. The red curtain, one side of it, has been dropped. Both of the whole red curtain is now closed. In the central arched window on the second floor of St. Peter's Basilica, we now just have a closed red curtain. Any moment now, it seems, the senior deacon will come out. It is opening again. There are three men on the balcony, and we should hear in just a moment who the new pope is.
And this is Cardinal Estevez Medina of Chile.
Fratelli e sorelle carissimi.
Fratelli e sorelle carissimi. Queridísimos hermanos y hermanas. Bien chers frères et sœurs. Liebe Brüder und Schwestern, dear brothers and sisters, annuncio vobis gaudium magnum.
And that phrase means, Monsignor Irwin?
I announce to you great news of great joy.
Habemus Papam.
We have a pope.
Eminentissimum ac reverendissimum Dominum, Dominum Iosephum. Sancte Romanae Ecclesiae Cardinalem Ratzinger.
That is Joseph Ratzinger?
That's correct.
The cardinal who celebrated the funeral mass for John Paul II and number two in the Vatican for all these years under Pope John Paul II. And the announcement continues.
Qui sibi nomen imposuit Benedicti decimi sexti.
The name is Benedict.
Benedict.
And my Latin has escaped me. I can't translate the number.
I believe it's 26.
Benedict the 26th. Well, we'll go with that just for the moment. So now let's go back to Emily Harris. What's the reaction there in amidst the crowd?
Well, Neil, I think you could hear the great cheers as the name was announced. The name, of course, given in Latin, not the name that now Pope Ratzinger has taken, but initially letting us know who he was, Cardinal Ratzinger, drew great cheers from here. And the curtain has now, the curtain closed, and the people have gone back inside, the senior deacon, although now they are more people emerging, and they are preparing, they're laying out a red a banner, hanging it over the balcony in the center of the second floor of St. Peter's Basilica. We'll be here for a while longer. We don't know how long, but of course the crowd here now knows who they're waiting for, their new Pope, Joseph Ratzinger, who until now had been a cardinal from Germany.
Joseph Ratzinger was proclaimed cardinal by Paul VI back in 1977. And Monsignor Irwin, at the age of this particularly new pope, how is that going to be interpreted? Is this going to be seen as a caretaker?
Certainly. That's going to be.
Just a moment. We'll get your mic up. Go ahead.
Certainly, some will immediately say this is a caretaker at 78 years of age. One does not know his longevity. Certainly it will be said, I believe, that it's going to be, again, a moment of consolidation, of clarity about doctrine. It's going to be a time of moving to a European. That's an interesting, it's a non-Italian, having spent many years in the Vatican, but he's still not an Italian. And that, obviously, the cardinals have decided that they're moving in the direction of stay the course.
The papal flag has now been draped outside the balcony of that window on the second floor of St. Peter's, and the curtain is being drawn as men withdraw inside again. And I guess the next person we will see there is the new pope, and some rapid translations, we think now Benedict the 16th.
That is correct. Benedict the 16th, and we'll see him in just a moment.
And joining us now is NPR's Silvia Pagioli in Rome, somebody who's quite familiar with Cardinal Ratzinger.
Cardinal Ratzinger has been, until the death of Pope John Paul II, was the prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. That's the Vatican Department, which was once known as the Holy Inquisition. And I have to say there have been some also unpleasant labels for the cardinal. He's been called sometimes Cardinal Panzer when he was there at the Congregation. He has been responsible for the crackdown against many liberal theologians, against the movement of liberation theology, which was very active in Latin America in the 70s and 80s. He has cracked down against liberal theologians also in other parts of the world. Ratzinger is very famous for a document for a few years ago, a document he issued called Dominus Jesus, in which he upheld the position that there is salvation only through Christ. It was a document that upset a lot of the other Christian churches. This is a controversial choice, I would say, for some. Many liberal Catholics will not be happy with the choice of the 115 cardinals. But it is certainly a choice which will ensure the continuity of the rigid doctrinal stands of Pope John Paul II, And perhaps it is seen as a transition papacy. Perhaps it's seen as a papacy that, because he's 78 years old, I think we are now, we will break now. We see him appearing. Benedict XVI appears in his first time in front of the square in St. Peter's Square. He is wearing the white vestments and covered with a red cape. I see him now from the back, decorated in red and gold damask, a large cross, a mane of very white hair. As I said, Benedict XVI turned 78 just last Saturday.
He is now receiving the cheers of the crowd and extending his hands in blessing. As we await his first word, Sylvia, you were talking earlier about that, a fat pope succeeded by a thin pope, a conservative by a liberal. This does not seem to according to that pattern.
Obviously, that rule, or at least that tradition, has been broken, at least this time. But, it was a very long papacy. And of the 115 electing voting cardinals, all but three were chosen by John Paul II. Certainly, they vary because of the regions they come from, also the issues that they all confront. But one of the things they practically all share is their strict doctrinal conservatives, and Ratzinger is perhaps the most doctrinaire and most conservative of them. He was one of the three not appointed by John Paul II, and in fact he was considered one of the kingmakers in the 1978 conclave that elected John Paul II. The microphone has been placed in front of him now. We will hear.
Cari fratelli e sorelle, dopo il grande Papa Giovanni Paolo II,
speaking of his predecessor there,
the great John Paul II,
i signori cardinali hanno eletto me, un semplice, umile lavoratore nella vigna del Signore.
The cardinals have elected me a simple, humble servant in the vineyard of the Lord.
Mi consola il fatto che il Signore sa lavorare e agire anche con strumenti insufficienti, e soprattutto mi affido alle vostre preghiere.
I am consoled that the Lord also uses imperfect instruments, and I ask your prayers.
Nella gioia del Signore risorto, fiduciosi del suo aiuto permanente, andiamo avanti. Il Signore ci aiuterà, e Maria, sua Santissima Madre, sta alla nostra parte. Grazie.
In the joy of this Easter season, we move forward with the Lord always with us and with Mary, his mother.
The new pope pausing just for a moment to gesture to the crowd, perhaps asking for a little quiet. You can hear the singing and the chanting there as the people of Rome greet the new pope. St. Peter's Square is now jam-packed, crowded earlier, but in the hour or so since white smoke began emerging from the chimney on the Sistine Chapel, many thousands more have crowded into Vatican City.
Procediamo alla benedizione.
Let us proceed now to the blessing.
Sancti Apostoli Petrus et Paulus, de quorum potestate et autoritate confidimus, ipsi intercedant pro nobis ad Dominum.
Amen.
Precibus et meritis Beate Maria Semper Virginis, Beati Michaelis Arcangeli, Beati Ioannis Baptiste, et Sanctorum Apostolorum Petri et Pauli, et Omnium Sanctorum, Miseriator Vestri Omnipotens Deus, et dimissis peccat omnibus peccatis vestris, perducat vos Iesus Christus ad vitam aeternam.
Amen.
Indulgentiam, absolutionem et remissionem omnium peccatorum vestrorum, spatium vere et fructuose penitentiae, cor semper penitens, et emendationem vitae, gratiam et consolationem Sancti Spiritus, et finalem perseverantiam in bonis operibus, tribu ad vobis, omnipotens et misericors Dominus.
Amen.
Et benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et maneat semper.
And with that, Pope Benedict XVI gestures again to the crowd who is cheering him in St. Peter's Square. Joseph Ratzinger, born on the 16th of April, 1927, and Marktl am Inn in Germany. As you could hear from his Italian earlier, quite familiar with that language after his long years in Rome. And listening Monsignor Irwin, as we look at the new Pope and hear the cheers for him, were those other gentlemen there on the balcony with him?
I couldn't help but indicate that on the extreme left at the loggia is Cardinal Baum, the retired Archbishop of Washington. He was prefect of the Congregation for Education in the Vatican, and he's about the same age as Cardinal Ratzinger. He was also the other cardinal named by Paul VI present at this conclave. I'm just delighted to see that.
If the interpretation is that this might be a caretaker regime, we should be reminded that sometimes caretakers last a little longer and have more influence than they might be expected to. John the 23rd thought to be a caretaker when he was first elected.
Well, depends what one does in the office. There was John the 23rd in fairly short time, but revolutionized the church in terms of calling the Second Vatican Council. And in the last century, in 1878, they elected Leo the 13th, who many thought was going to be a caretaker, but he was pope for 25 years. So one must be careful about very quick name-calling or sound bites about anyone in that office.
Pope Benedict is now turning from the balcony and retreating back into inside St. Peter's. The crowd again cheering the new Pope. On the balconies on either side, you can see the red hats and vestments of the College of Cardinals, the men who elected Benedict XVI, selected one of their own, Cardinal Ratzinger, and elevated him to the papacy in this conclave that dates back to medieval times, and we've heard all about the ritual and the ceremony. We've heard so much. I meant to ask you, Monsignor Irwin, the blessing, the prayer that the new Pope read, that's traditional?
That's correct, and it's an invocation of Saints Peter and Paul, an invocation of Michael and the archangels, an invocation of Mary, that we would be remitted of our sins, that we would be cleansed of our sins, and given the blessing in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
And again, we hear the bells of St. Peter's 1 minute before the hour. This is not this in celebration.
That's correct. Usually upon the ending of an Urbi et Orbe blessing, they're followed by this kind of ringing of all of the bells of St. Peter's.
Monsignor Kevin Irwin here with us here in the studio. Again, Joseph Ratzinger of Germany has been elected the new Pope, Benedict XVI. Bells are ringing out. This all happened within the last hour as word of this has spread. And you're listening to live coverage of this event from NPR News.
And you're listening to this live coverage from NPR News on AM 580 WILL Urbana. A programming note, we had preempted coverage of the dedication of the Lincoln Museum and Library. We'll have highlights of that and the announcement